Hi, Dad.
Hello, Grace. I'm not over the election yet.
You look sad.
I'm so fed up.
You look sad and you look tired.
Oh, I am tired.
You stayed up all night, didn't you, on the election?
I was just doing telly all night. And then, since then, I mean, the Labour leadership election is just grim, man. Frank Dobson's funeral, that was really uplifting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Best funeral speech I've heard in years.
I know. I saw your tweet from Frank Dobson's son, Tom. Mm. But also, I think, you know what I actually think, Dad? I'm just going to try and switch off from politics a bit now and enjoy Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
It's just dominated
everything
this period too much. And it's funny, there's nothing we can do right now.
As soon as you say that, I've not actually watched the news since the election.
Which is healthy, I think, just right now.
I did Hard Talk. Quite enjoyed that.
I don't want to know who he's appointing in his cabinet and what friends from school he's
amazing. Nicky Morgan was gone to the House of Lords.
And Zach.
And Zach Gold. Amazing. God, that really shocked me.
Yeah.
Not. Anyway, move on.
Anyway, but it's Christmas and we're excited for Christmas. And this is our last podcast that's coming out before Christmas.
And do you know what? We're playing on Boxing Day at Everton. So it's two of Joey Barton's clubs. Well, that's a convenient link.
Wow, that's a convenient link. So the person we've got on the podcast this week
is the same as last week.
Part two. So we hope that you enjoyed last week's episode. This one, I guess we go into feminism more. Last week was not just football, but it was more football. And this one is much more feminism. We talk about Ched Evans and...
who plays for Joey.
Joey's decision to sign him after, you know, everything that happened with his... going to prison for rape and then getting acquitted, and I think I challenge him on that.
I think it's fair to say you are more engaged in this part of the conversation than
you are.
No, than you were last week with part one.
But also more than you were.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting.
This one.
I was quite quiet because I guess it was interesting for me to see your very, very strong views about it, challenging him in a way. But I thought he kind of held his own. And it was very interesting. You know,
I don't think Joey Barton's ever not going to hold his own, by the way.
Well, no, but okay, but it was interesting as well that
he listened.
Afterwards, he definitely listened, and afterwards he said, you know, he'd really like to kind of meet again and chat over some of these issues again. Of course, he loves talking, doesn't he?
He loves talking. So, needs no more introduction because you will have already met him last week.
Let's do our little stupid thing that you make us do every week. Anyway, our guest today is part two of the interview on the podcast, Football, Feminism and Everything Between with Joey Barton.
On a scale of 1 to 10, be completely honest, how much of a feminist are you?
What class feminism? What define
the belief that women and men should have total, complete equality and should be treated equally, equal opportunities should be represented equally. You know,
I don't think any of us. So I don't like the categories of women and men. First and foremost, I struggle with that.
Okay, but there are, because women and men are treated differently.
Well, we're biologically just completely different, do you mean?
Yeah, exactly, but we're also treated in majorly different ways, represented in different ways.
Well, we all are, so I think all men are, like, you know, are treated in different ways as well. I think everybody's treated differently.
Okay, but from birth, women and men are treated differently, you know? Even you said earlier, your daughter's, she's a girl, she doesn't like football as much. You know, we are sort of assigned roles from very early on in our lives.
Yeah.
So that just is a fact, you know, like women's football isn't taken as seriously as men's football. It's just a fact, you know. So that's kind of an imbalance of...
But again, I disagree with you. I don't think women's football is not taken as seriously by men as women's football is taken by women.
Yeah, for sure.
But women's football is taken very, very seriously by
women.
Girls.
Yeah, 100%, I mean, which is amazing.
Peter Clark, who plays for Udders, daughter's a really good footballer, and you can see her passion for it. She's enthusiastic about football.
But then I guess it comes back to the fact that football...
But she's more enthusiastic about women's football, probably.
For sure, and so am I. I'm really enthusiastic about women's football, way more than men's. But I guess that comes back to the fact that...
it's a different sport, though, really, in essence, isn't it? Women's football and men's football. There should be... women's football should be... adjusted for women, you know, physiologically, biologically, physiologically, we have to accept that men and women are fundamentally different.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's saying that they're exactly the same sport. I don't think the game needs to be massively adjusted for women.
Well, I think
but
the pitch sizes and the goal sizes and the weight of ball.
Yeah, I think we've spoken to a lot of women in football and they just disagree with that. Like, I don't think you'll hear as many women saying that. I think that's an opinion of a lot of men in football, not many women in football.
No, I'm trying to talk about it. If we're going to make women's football better as a spectator sport, to stand on its own in the marketplace against men's football, if you keep playing on the same size pitch as men, with the same size football as men, by men's rules, you're always going to have an inferior product because men are bigger, stronger, faster than women. That's just biology. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I can do about that. If you tailor it, so you bring it, so everything's in proportion, I think women's football could legitimately make a lot of strides, tactically, technically, way beyond its current limitations because of the physiological output.
But then, I don't know, because I would still argue that like the Women's World Cup made those strides in a big way.
I mean, watching the game at Wembley, this is me trying to help the women's game move forward. We watched a game at Wembley the other day. They have a huge crowd, which is incredible for women's football. Because I remember the early onset of women's football, which was like girls. We had a girl in our school, Catherine Conway, who was brilliant at football. She played in our school team until she was about 13.
In the boys' team.
In the boys' team.
The main team.
And then was she?
Played
and then
on
what
the playground.
Happened?
Then what happened was puberty. And it changed things.
I love, by the way, you talk about the early onset of women's football like it was a disease.
No. I mean, I can remember it because I can remember all like the Doncaster Bells and all the really good women's football teams. And, you know, I grew up in Liverpool. As many girls played football as lads. We played on the playground. Nobody cared whether you were a man or a woman or a boy or a girl. If you were playing football at school dinner time and you were good at football, you played. You know, Catherine played with us. As I say, she played in our school team. She played in the boys' team at school because she was that good at football. She was a good player. And for a girl, when she went and played with the girls, she was very, very good because she'd been playing with the lads all the time. Played on the playground every break time, every dinner time. And there was no, we've got Catherine on the team. She was better than a lot of the lads. Certainly in our school, until they started growing and getting bigger and stronger because lads naturally got bigger when they got to like 12, 13, 14 and then the games became harder and harder for her. And then I think just the men-women barrier that is not put in by us because as kids, I don't think young people see men and women. I think it's school
That's
teachers.
That's when it changes, yeah.
Everybody starts putting barriers in to protect, you know, the innocence of children. That's what was put in. It wasn't like we put them in.
What were you going to say about Wembley?
So then I watched the women's game at Wembley and...
Against Germany.
Wembley's a tough pitch. Mm. Listen, Wembley's a tough pitch to play on. It's a leg-sapping pitch. It's a pitch that doesn't bring out the best in terms of technical quality of anybody. You know, it's a pitch that doesn't reward everything that you put into it. Where there's some other pitches that you... Like Turf Moor's a pitch where... Physically, what you put into the pitch, you get back out of it because of the response of and then the way it's structured. Wembley's been designed for not just football.
Yeah.
So the pitch, Wembley, when you look back and I watch the Stanley Matthews film that's recently being made, Stanley Matthews playing on the pitch at Wembley. Wembley's the best pitch in the country. We used to have a bowling green on an old people's home. Not a bowling green. We used to have a bowling green in the Flower Park and we used to have a pitch that was on... It was at the back of an old people's home, but it was their garden. But because it was maintained, we used to call them Wembley and Mini Wembley because they were the best pitches we played on, and we'd go and play games of football on them. We weren't meant to, but we would. And in the end, they just let us play on there because we didn't cause anyone any problems. Now, when you looked at the old Wembley, that was the best pitch in the country, so everyone dreamed about playing at Wembley. Wembley now is one of probably the worst pitches in the country because all the Premier League stadiums and probably Championship stadiums, even League One stadium, got a better football pitch than it. So I watched the women's game at Wembley, which is a phenomenal occasion. 80,000 people in the stadium, sold out. You know, it's a little bit false because it's not people. It's a lot of them fans you get at, say, the games that are the charity game at Old Trafford, the Soccer Aid, where it's like, it's not football fans, it's screaming young people who are just on a day out, and it saves them entertaining the kids at a play centre. They take them to a football stadium to watch a game, and it's England-Germany, and I'm watching them take corners, and I'm like, ah, you're not helping, because they couldn't get the corner where it needed to get to. And I'm like, that's not right. So you watch it and you go, I'm watching as a football fan going, nah, you can't put this out and expect people to buy on this. Not when you flick over and there's Pep Guardiola's Man City playing, who are playing incredible stuff. It's just not
fair.
It's
really
fair.
Interesting that, because I don't watch men's football, so I don't really have much to compare. So when I watch women's football, I'm so enthused by it because it's women, and I don't really have much to compare it to. Do you know what I mean?
But would you make any... But Joey's point about...
No, I know, and that's what I'm saying, is I don't really have...
Women get offended if you say that, but I don't see why they should either.
But this is... So let's flip it out. Do you like cinema? Do you like movies?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to go to the cinema and watch a movie of your favourite film director, the last Quentin Tarantino movie, and it's been done on multi-million pound budget and production, and everything's cinematically where he wants it to be. And then you're going to watch a film that is inferior in lots of ways because of the way they've thought about
the
angles
films.
They've shot from. Yeah, I don't think it's quite an indie film. You're putting two products into the marketplace, and I think if they just adjusted a couple of things, the women's game, it's already grown really quickly. I think it become.
But you need
even
a whole.
Would you ever manage a women's team?
I don't think my skill set at this moment in time would work there. But at a point in the future, I mean, one of the best managers I've ever spoken to is a woman manager, Emma Hayes. I think she's an outstanding manager. But commonsensical. Whenever I hear her talk about football, she speaks incredibly articulately with a real understanding of the game. So it's not like I'm going, men are better than women at football. I don't think we are, because women have very, very great skills in an empathetic space, which would probably make you a miles better manager of people than it would be in a man. So I think if we're smart about how we work together, I think both games, because I do see them at this moment in time as entirely separate games, could hugely benefit one another and help each other become better. We could definitely learn so much from the women's game in terms of, you know, there's many, many things that women are miles better than men are. And we could learn so much from them. But I think if women didn't see it as... So I just noticed that you got your back up straight away, because I'm saying you should adjust the rules. And, oh, why should we do that with women? It's equal. Let's be realistic about it. Let's say...
I am realistic, but I'm allowed to have my opinion.
The size of... And I'm not saying, you know, the size of a football for men's a size 5. Say we move the women's football down to a size 4. Well... Would anybody really notice the difference? No, but I guarantee you, in terms of the physicality and the output, that would, you know, the level of passes and the range of passes some of the women players would then be able to do, because the ball's a bit smaller and the ball's more suited to their physiological state.
But if you shrink the pitch, you're gonna have to build an entire new infrastructure.
But it's not by miles, Al. It's not by miles. No, you don't. You know, we adjust pitches all the time
for
the Rugby Union. We're not talking about moving the pitch from like a 5-a-side pitch. We're talking about a couple of meters either way. You know, making the goal a foot shorter either way. It's not much. It's not hard. You could put another goal inside our goal. Just another little frame, maybe that much. But I think it would help the goalkeepers for women. I think it would help, you know, because if we're going to make the ball smaller and we're going to make it move quicker, because that's what it will do if it, you know, it's physical, you know, it will move at a different rate of velocity. So therefore, we've got to give the keepers a better chance. So it's all good and well saying, well, we'll make the ball smaller, but then you've got to adjust the pitch slightly. And I think that the end product we'd get faster women's game. It would be more... I think it'd be a better spectator sport for men to watch, because I want to watch women's football. I can't watch women's football because I don't learn much from
it. I do also think it's about the sort of infrastructure of women's football. You know, like the reason in America they have so many great female football players is because they're investing from a very young age in women's football. That's not happening here. It's not happening in a lot of countries around the world. It's starting to happen here.
Yeah, it's also because American parents won't let the girls play the popular impact American sports.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying about when we're talking about the quality of women's football, I'm saying that once more money gets invested in women's football from a young age, I do think the quality of women's football will improve without necessarily changing like things like the pitch and the goal size. I'm completely listening to your point on that, and I don't really have a definitive opinion on it, but I'm also saying that we need to kind of invest in women's football from a younger age, so that, because I don't think necessarily when women hit puberty, it would mean that they can't play football. I just don't think there's like a space for them as much in schools to be like, okay, well, here's the girls' team, you know?
Yeah.
But Joey's point is they can't play with boys anymore.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, but then there isn't a girls' team in a lot of schools.
If we want true equality, then we've got to have no men's and boys' teams. It's got to be unisex teams, isn't it? So physiologically, you know it's not going to happen. Let's be honest. It might be one.
I don't think that's true equality, though. I just think giving men and women the same sort of opportunity to have a unisex team.
Well, no, it's to say anybody can do any job. So if a woman can do any job that a man could do, which is true equality for me, is everybody's able to do everything. Well, we know the world that we live in isn't that way. I can't be the next prince of this country, can I? I can't take Prince Andrew's.
That's different. That's very type. Different because the royal family is completely inaccessible. You could be a politician, you know,
Because
the royal family, the way you get into the royal family is you have to be in it by blood.
But
so
this is what I don't
using
understand.
Using that as a comparison doesn't really work.
What I don't understand is how we can ask for meritocracy and equality in lots of ways, but then we go, well, you can't really do that or do that.
Yeah,
on the other scale.
But that's like, I don't really believe in the royal family. But what I'm saying is that men and women should be able to, like, be on boards, be on the same boards, be in the same part of the cabinet, be leaders of countries, you know.
But I'm also told that if I ever meet Prince Andrew or Prince Charles or the Queen, that I have to
bow
down to them and
yeah,
say
which is
I'm
bullshit.
High. Well, it's so okay. So surely, until we've got rid of that, until we remove that out of our society, until we remove that, then everything else is going to be tainted. Everything else is going to be skewed because you can't ask for equality unless you demand
that's
it.
That's true. I completely agree with that. Completely. But then I guess I'm talking about
what you can affect.
What you can affect, right? So you have a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
Do you see their opportunities as exactly the same?
Well, you'd like to think so, yeah. But
do you
also
think the world is set up for them to be able to do exactly the same thing?
No, but I didn't build the world that we live in. You know, we try to adapt to the world that we live in and change the world in terms of where we want the world to be for our kids. And no doubt that was part of your dad's reasoning when he was in politics. You try to shape the world to make it the place that you would have wanted to grow up in. You know, that's how I see it. I mean, we can't do anything about the world we grow up in because that's kind of the cards I've already dealt. But try to shape the world now. When I talk about football, which is my real skill, you know, my real, where I've spent most of my life, I'm trying to go, how do we help women's football make more of an impact? So it's like, I want to watch it. So I would love to be able to sit and watch a women's game. Like, I'll watch women's tennis and I'll really enjoy watching. I actually enjoy watching women's tennis more than I do men's tennis because it's better, it's less powerful. There's more rallies, there's more skill, there's more subtlety, there's more quality. And I can actually relate because I go, I could do those shots with the men when they're serving 110 mile an hour. I'm like, I could never do that. Physiologically, I'm never going to be able to get to their level. The biggest influence on my life is my grandmother. And she taught me, you can be whatever you want in the world. You don't have to accept anything. If you want it enough, you can get out and get after it. Don't ever accept anybody telling you can't do anything. So she taught me how to be in the world. A very, very strong matriarch figure. I think my partner, Georgia, goes about it in a slightly different way, but is certainly from that ilk and from that stock. 100%.
You've been with your partner since you were really young, haven't you?
We've been together for 12 and a bit years now, yeah? 12 and a bit years, so. But my daughter's the same. She's the one. My lads are very, very sensitive souls. My daughter's the one where I go, oh,
Like me.
She reminds me of me in many, many ways. And I think, I don't worry about her.
You'll be making a podcast of her one day.
I'm like, she's going to be fine. She's the least of my concerns. Yeah.
Just another thing on the difference between men's and the women's game. So a lot of women footballers are out as gay.
Yeah.
And there's so few in men's football. Now, is that homophobia, or is it just the fact that there aren't that many gay footballers in the men's game?
Football, Al, in lots of ways mirrors society, doesn't it? So we're talking about women's football, men's football, the stigmas attached to it, the kind of sexism attached to it, because it is still relevant in the society we live in. Weirdly, men do sometimes think they're better than women, which surely at this point we realise we're not. Surely every man realises he is flawed beyond his own comprehension and usually needs support in putting himself back together, because men are very much kind of warriors. We do lots of things in isolation, and women don't. They share and they talk and they communicate and they're emotive and they're just a lot smarter and better, more rounded people than men in many, many ways.
You actually basically what you said is, because it's cold, not do any shape. Transfer possession, sponsor out game, set pieces, don't do any shape, don't name the team.
Yeah, fine.
I love it.
We've got a big decision. We've got a big decision at number nine, and number nines in football are the divas. They're the divas.
Oh, really? Okay.
So if I'm not there to police it, yeah. There could be, especially today. But yeah, so for me, in terms of how can you not be aware of that? How can certainly when you've had failings and you delve into it and you try and understand why things are the way they are, you delve into your forefathers, but also you delve into that kind of matriarch line to see where have the women in the family come from, where, and actually the women in my family are a lot more consistent and a lot more rounded than the men in the family. So actually, you need to be aware of that. You need to communicate about, like, me and my partner, we just go from strength to strength because we talk a lot more. She is a much better football manager than me in many, many ways, and I take lots of my problems. I'm like, how would you deal with this? This has happened in work today. And,
I can hear it,
many, many things that have happened, I'm like, how are you seeing this? And she'll come at it from a mother's perspective, or, she'll just give me a different perspective on things that I've never thought of that.
Can I ask one more question? When you
just briefly on the homophobia thing, though, if you had a player came in today and said, "By the way, Gaffer, I've been, I'm gay and I want to tell the squad,"
it'd be strange, Al. It'd be strange, because you'd know you'd be a pioneer in that space.
Do you think there's a pressure now that, like, the next big, the next player to come out? Do you think there is a lot of fear for, like, whoever that person is, that they'll then have to be the spokesperson?
Yeah, it's not easy landscape for them. It's not an easy landscape.
Have you known players in your career who are gay
and not come out?
Not wanted to come out.
You always have people who you think definitely different, but didn't bother you. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, this is the thing I don't get with it's an ignorance, really, to think that every gay man fancies every other man is a ridiculous thing to think about. It's like anything. Do you fancy every female that you come into contact with? No, you don't. Of course you don't. You fall in love with your partner and you build a relationship with your partner, and that's special. It's not every person that you see. So to think that any gay man in a football environment would get in the showers and go, "Oh, look at all their dicks and I fancy them all and I just want to suck all of them off."
Oh, stop it!
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's a family podcast.
But also, we've got to be realistic about things.
Yeah, I think so.
But so the stigma is real.
The stigma is real for men who haven't shared dressing rooms and haven't become aware of the world that they're living in.
But there must be gay footballers.
100% there is.
But none of them are out there. Well, so that's hard for them.
I can't imagine how tough it is for them. And it's embarrassing that we've allowed the game to get to this point. I mean, yeah, we are trying to do things to make it better, but it's nowhere near good enough.
You've got your rainbow laces on.
Got your rainbow laces.
Yeah, I felt how that... I was telling you off camera before how it came about. I get an email, I was at QPR at the time, and this was the time when I was playing with social media. I was just trying to see what it was, what was going on in the world. And if you remember, it was one of the early kind of pioneers through it, and it was a disaster zone at times because nobody knew what to do with it. Nobody still
Twitter
knows what to do with it.
Was your, like...
Twitter for me was just a great way to
playground.
Just poke the box.
New playground.
Just poke the box and just see where the boundaries were and see what everybody was comfortable with. And I'm one of them people that just, let's just see how far we can push this. At some point there'll be a reset button and we'll find out where it is. But if you never try, you know, Peter Kay has said Sport and Chance used to talk to me about my energy kind of being like a double-edged sword, and very if channeled, and if it's very, very productive and can do wonderful things, but if it gets out of kilter, it can cause problems. So once you're aware of that and you're aware of that power, I used to resent myself lots of times growing up. I was like, why do I have to be? Why has it got to be me who's got to say that? Or because my personality naturally goes towards conflict.
Mm.
For whatever reason, I don't know what it is. You know, they talk about fight or flight. I go towards resolution. Let's sort this out. Somebody needs to take care of this. This needs taken care of. So I would have probably been a very, very good military person.
It's twice you mentioned the army.
But they were my only options because I'm looking at it going, I had football, the military and crime. And I knew with crime where that goes. And
by the way, we were talking about your shoelaces.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. So it goes, do you want to get involved in and there's lots of smart people who've got involved in crime and done very, very well at it. I mean, there's lots of them probably sit in the House of Lords and the House of Parliament, in my opinion, you know. I think there's as many gangsters in there as there is, you know, in the council estates and the cities that we all frequent. And I just think when you get to that point where, you know, I got an email, I'm poking the box, and everybody's like, right, who is this guy? He doesn't fit in the box that we've tried to fit him in, because the way they used to be able to caricature you didn't exist because social media changed it.
Yeah.
It changed the world that we live in, and for the better, in lots of ways for the worse as well. But I think it's allowed people to connect and find common ground and realise that they're not the only people who are thinking or feeling that way, whether it's stamp collectors on Facebook or, you know, the early ones of MySpace. It gives you, this is the music we were into, this is the song I want to put us, and this is, I want to try and connect with other people who like the music I like. So all of a sudden, it was a way of getting community as our communities were breaking down, you know, the community centres, and now we're seeing communities really breaking down, you know, the support mechanisms for many, many people from all different walks of life being in a very, very dangerous situation where if we're not careful, we could end up with a very, very dangerous society. And a Malfashion who contacted me, and I remember reading the email, and it was like, I've contacted, and I won't name the names because it's not right, but she'd contacted lots of people who considered themselves to be champions of
equality,
and, you know, they speak out on lots of things in a football space, but they weren't prepared to do it because...
What was she asking
you to do?
She was asking me to speak to her about a documentary about a cousin or her uncle, Justin, who'd taken his own life because he was gay. And
he was the first openly gay footballer.
He was obviously black as well, and there was a lot of connotations, and he felt so isolated that he'd end up killing himself, which you can't imagine being in his shoes, but it was obviously a society that wasn't prepared for that situation. And you think, wow, you know, that could have been my son, that could have been my daughter, and we wouldn't want the world. And I didn't have kids at the time, but I was starting to think about having children, and I started to think about, fucking hell, your kids are going to grow up Like, I mean, you must have it with your dad when they write, you know, he's a war criminal, and you know he's not. He's a good man, he's a good human being. But it must hurt you to read that. My kids are going to read about me being a violent man and going to jail and fighting with teammates. And as a father, that you don't want your kids to read that about you, because you want your kids to know you for the man that you are. And you ultimately have to say, well, they will. So you try to do right in the world. You try to champion causes and use your influence or your notoriety for good. And the Rainbow Laces, as I say, Amal contacted me. No one would speak to her. You know, people who, when I was like, they wouldn't speak to her mainly because they were shit scared about the stigma of people attaching that. They, are you gay? Is he gay? Is he?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, so, I couldn't give a shit if people think I'm gay. It's probably one of the least insulting things they think about me. So they think I'm a Neanderthal who gets drunk, fights in town, just this caveman who lives in out in this football environment, and stay, if you see him out in public, stay clear of him. He's like Charles Bronson, but like walking around. And the reality of that is not true, obviously. So I spoke to Amal, and I'm like, look, what you, she's like, that's what you need. So she tells me what you need. I said, well, nobody will speak to you about this. I can't get an interview. Nobody will talk on the topic. So I'm like, I don't really want to be the person that has to say this, because there should be a lot of people saying this, but I'll do this. So I said, I'd love to do it. And like, other people should be doing it, but I'd love to do it. So she comes down to the training ground at Harlington QPR, and we just walked around the training ground, had a chat, and it was filmed. And I couldn't believe that people weren't talking about it. As it was, she put a great documentary out. It started wheels moving. Off the back of that, I got in Stonewall, UK, got in contact with me, and I was doing some stuff with Paddy Power, weirdly, at the time. I was going out to their, you know, the big gambling company. I was going out to and speaking to them, because they're quite disruptive in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So we sat down and had a conversation, and they wanted to do something about raising awareness about, you know, getting this topic of gay people, gay footballers, just getting this in the public domain via the number one sport in the country, which was football. And we sat down, we had a number of conversations, a few things were kicked around about how we could, because you couldn't put a political message, you couldn't pull your shirt up anymore, the powers that be, they'd sanitise that. Robbie Fowler showing solidarity for the Dockers. Now, you're not allowed to do that. You'll be fined. Don't do that. That harms the product. That harms the marketability of the Premier League globally. Don't do that. We can only do things that we can monetize and we can sell and we can profit from. And it became a corporation, because we went from English football becoming the national game to English football becoming a corporation that, like Apple, that makes billions for the economy. And it can lose its soul when you do that, because you become a number, not...
So
we sat down, had a conversation. We come up with the Rainbow Laces idea, and I was like, yeah, that'll fly. They can't do anything about that. Did Rainbow Laces.
Were you the first Rainbow Laces boy?
So I was the first player to ever wear Rainbow Laces, but I also had long hair at the time, so I wore a headband on the photo shoot. But obviously, that opened up a floodgate of Joey Barton's gay, obviously, everyone then, you faggot, you're gay. And I'm just like, seriously, because I've got like laces in, like, if yeah, no problem. If
that, yeah, yeah, no problem. Yeah, good for you.
But also, I'm like, yeah, by opening that opening up, it showed me, actually, because I wasn't aware of it, because I wasn't a gay man, I wasn't aware of it until I did that. And then you realise that the imbeciles out there who had these closed minds, who were in football stadiums, these relics of a bygone era, who just didn't have an education, basically, just hadn't had exposure to common sense. And you go, wow, we are that far. We in some places, we are genuinely that far behind. And to see it go where it's gone and the FA pick it up, because nobody wants to be the early adopter, do they? Nobody wants to be the first through the wall. You know, the first person through the wall ends up bloodied always, and it's going to be the same. You know, we've had players come out after the playing careers, or we've had players come out in other leagues that aren't as
prominent.
And look, you know, if one in 10 men are gay, you know, there's a lot of footballers, you know, you live rational.
Yeah.
You know, not that we need a kind of witch hunting to find out who they are, because it will eventually
change.
Play out. I think the challenge is not for the gay footballer to come out, for all of us to create a landscape where no one's even that bothered about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and when people don't feel so feared about coming out.
Where it's just like, yeah, he's a footballer.
Yeah.
He's a gay.
It will get there.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
It will take time, and I think the current political landscape will slow it down rather than move it, because there's so many sides now to pick. You know, we're just inventing categories for people now. There's just, are you Brexiteer? We're isolating people. So we're not bringing people together. We're forcing people apart. And if you do that...
Makes it harder.
Makes everything harder. Mm. Everything's better when you think... You don't have to think alike.
But
you know,
we're in
unison. But you have to think together.
In some way,
you have to have conversation. You can't debate anymore. You can't have a conversation anymore. You just get attacked. You know, the attacker, you're an anti-Semite, are they really? You're a racist.
Can I ask you about...
I mean, bear in mind, I've been to jail where I've seen people who are racist. I've spoken to them. I've seen they're in there for things, and you speak to them and you go, yeah, you're not the full shilling. You're mentally ill. You're mentally, you know, you need mental help.
Mm.
And if we cut, so you've got people who go into a system to get mental help, they don't get it in there, they come back out into a system that is now geared even less for them because they can't get a job because they've been in prison. The support network and the services around those people aren't there anymore because they're being cut or they're being, certainly, you know, we haven't got enough social services, we don't have enough in the NHS. We will end up with the Joker. That's what we'll end up with.
Can I ask you one question and then we probably should do the...
Have you told
Joe? Yeah. You know when you were saying there was a piece in The Guardian about you having no black players in your...
Atlantic.
It was in The Atlantic.
The Athletic.
It's a paying behind the paywall subscription. It's good. Okay. Yeah,
so,
okay.
Wait, when that...
But they got to produce content.
When that happened, what did you think? Were you like, well, okay,
we were already aware of it.
Right, you were already aware of it.
We were already aware of it. And I was like, what are you trying to say? Like, what are you trying to say? You're trying to say we're racists, because if you are, that's incorrect. Are you trying to say there's a weird thing happening here where we haven't been able to recruit players for our first team to make our first team better, that we haven't managed to get in the building, but we've been actively trying to recruit anybody? We just want good people, good players.
Well, Burnley the same, we've got very few black players.
Well, but also you've got to think about, there's many factors at play. Do you know what I mean? There's many factors at play in terms of signing a football player. It's not as straightforward as we want him, we're going to sign him. It just doesn't work like that. You know, it's logistics, families moving, there's resettlement. You've got to factor in many things. And for a club with our financial resources,
not that possible.
It's tough.
Did you have any?
You're not stingy like Sean Dyche.
No. I'm the last to get paid. I think I'm the most underpaid man in football. I genuinely think, because I don't do it for that.
Signing new players, new staff, and going, all right, I'll pay for it.
Yeah. They help me do my job better. So
yeah,
like,
fair enough.
You're loaded. Well,
you've had a career.
I'm not loaded. I've done okay, Al. Yeah. I've done okay, but I've worked hard for that. Also, I haven't just been given it.
Talking of recruitment, did you have any doubts about signing Jed Evans, given that you're a bad boy, but given he's a bad boy as well?
Of course I did. I think, why would you make your job harder? Why would anybody
To make your job harder, because that's the sort of personality you are.
No, I don't want to make my job harder. Everybody wants to make the job as easy as they can. But somebody needs to give people a chance. I know the man from when I knew him as a young player at Man City, he was coming through. I hadn't really stayed in contact with him, but I'd obviously seen the case play out in the media, as I had. Many of the things I've done have played out in the media many times. And I have a different way of filtering what I see as the national interest or the national media's interest. And you know, you watch it play out and then you see what happens and you go, okay, not a great scenario, but as young men, you know, you kind of understand it happens in the world that we've lived in. You don't, you wouldn't want it to happen to your son or your daughter, but it, but listen, a lot of things that go on that we all don't want to go on, because there is a
Hoover. Sorry.
There's a lot of things that
let's
happen.
Just pause
that,
while that sounds, because that's really loud on the headphones. Sorry.
And if I felt Chet Evans had raped somebody, I would never have signed him at this football club. It would have been impossible for me to have.
But a lot of people do think. I mean, I know the case is played out, but a lot of people.
There are a lot of people that think that he's
a rapist. Yeah. Again, I don't, and I don't know the man. I don't understand. And I didn't win in the court. I don't know. I haven't read the papers. I wasn't privy to what had gone on in the courtroom. But
has it given you a lot of backlash? Like, did it get you, you know, in bad press?
I don't think it's helped me. I think it's, you know, there's certainly I feel that there's definitely, well, there's 100% a national news agenda to paint me as a certain type of person.
But that's why it's interesting that you did that, because I think, you know, that is something that will guarantee give you some bad press, you know, because there are a lot of people that think he's guilty.
But when you analyse what I've actually done, I've actually given a chance to somebody who's clearly made a mistake in his life and doesn't want to continue making mistakes in their life. I mean, you know, we all make mistakes. The scale of our mistakes vary from person to person. But if we're not going to rehabilitate people, if we're not going to help people find a different way or get better, then,
well, I guess
then what's the point?
In his case, it's kind of
take him outside and shot him.
In his case, it's kind of that the girl, her whole life got ruined. You know, she had to move. She's had to completely change her identity because her identity got revealed. Her whole life was ruined. His life has been rehabilitated with a lot of people helping him. I guess that's the difference to me. I don't really want to properly get into this because I want this. I like you, and I don't want to actually properly have an argument about Chet Evans. But that's kind of what I feel is that, like, his life was very easily rehabilitated after everything that happened, and her life was completely ruined and will never be the same again.
It's a valid
and it's something that I guess people don't think about. And now he's just, you know, playing again as you know, back to normal.
He was found to be innocent.
I know, and that's what. Yeah, I know that. I know that. But what I'm saying is, there are a lot of people in the country who still think he's guilty. A lot of people who followed the case very closely. So we can argue. Rape is very hard. It's a very difficult thing.
Yeah, but what do we go off? Do we go off? What do we go off? Do we go off? Is it?
I'm mainly more talking about, like, that girl's experiences right now. I'm not going to sit here and be like, he's guilty. I don't, you know, I'm not a judge. I'm not a lawyer. That's not my world. All I'm going to say is it's upsetting, I guess, to watch that her life got completely ruined. Where she had.
I don't know. I'm not. I don't know this person, and I'll explain this to you as best I can. So, if you ever go into prison, prison's tough. Prison is not straightforward. That's why it's the place you get sent when society deems that you need to go there. And to go into prison as a sex offender on a rape charge is a different prison that you go in as somebody who's had a fight with a couple of pints in them in a city centre. It's a different prison. It's a prison where you go in where you've got rapists and you've got sex offenders and you've got paedophiles all around you. In fact, you're actually segregated with those types of people. Now, if you've been proven innocent, which Chet has, that's all we've got to go on, and you've had to spend 2.5 years locked up, not surrounded by those people, not speaking to anybody, going into solitary confinement. You know, there's a very, very vulnerable man there as well who's been caught up in this. Now, I wasn't in the room. I don't know what went on that night out. I don't know. I wasn't there. You know, clearly they've gone back to the room for some kind of things. I don't know. I went in there, so don't know what's going on. Would I want my daughter to be in that situation? No, not a chance would I want that. Would I want my son to be in that situation? Not a chance would I want that. But the options we have are, we judge everybody on what they've done, and then we might as well take them outside and kill them, shoot them, execute them, do what they do in America, lethal injection. Is that the society that we want to, or that we want to build? Or do we want to stop things like this from happening? And the only way to stop things like this from happening is by discussing it sensibly.
Yeah, which is why it's good that we're having this conversation. You know, I think too often we just have conversations with people we agree with, and on this, there are things we're going to disagree agree on, for sure. I guess, you know, and I completely understand, appreciate your point. And I guess all I'm going to say is I don't agree with the process of victims of rape coming forward. She was meant to be anonymous. Her sexual history got brought up in court. And this is nothing to do with, like, Ched playing for Fleetwood. But what I'm saying is I disagreed with that whole process of what happened there. And I guess I just found it hard to watch how easy it was. And I, you know,
you have to put context to this as well. So contextually, before Ched's case gets into the courts, you had a few instances before where other high-profile footballers had kind of been, you know, there was the Newcastle players, I think, Titus Bramble, Kieran Dyer, a few of those type of players. There was a few things rumbling on about rock stars and footballers, and it was before this kind of Me Too, you know, this kind of film. Clearly the world that we were in, where it was politics, there was politicians, there was leaders of religious organisations who were abusing privilege and abusing power.
You know, that's all bad. Like, that doesn't normalise any of this behaviour.
I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying I'm completely with you. I'm saying it's not correct, but what I'm saying, society, it wasn't like it was just footballers who were going out and taking advantage of women. You know,
no, it's society.
Well, a lot of the ones you mentioned
if we flip this round, there's a lot of women who take advantage of men. You know, women who go to concerts and want to sleep with married members of rock bands, you know. Sexuality is used as a tool by both sexes. You know, it's part of our primeval kind of being. It's ultimately what we're all here for, isn't it? To procreate. Is that not what we're here for? To keep the species in existence.
So listen.
So let's do dream six-a-side team for the world.
That we
Joey Barton.
Move on a different tangent entirely.
Yeah.
So six-a-side team to save the world. Three men, three
to
women.
Save the world.
Dead or alive. Yeah, we've talked
who
about
who we're playing against.
The world.
You're the captain.
The world. You know, the world's all going to shit.
Isn't that fascinating? You define it immediately as an enemy.
No, you need to know what you're fighting against.
You're the first person that's asked
that. Right, the world's in a mess. You've got six people
to help you fix it.
Six people to help you fix the world?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's not really many footballers, is there?
Dead or alive as well. They can be dead.
Footballers?
No, no,
anyone.
People.
Anyone.
Oh, okay, yeah, great, yeah.
Footballers in.
I think we can definitely do with having Christopher Hitchens back at this moment in time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, we need some good debate. We haven't got many good debaters about now. Whether you'd agree with him or not, he's a fantastic debater. Fantastic.
All right.
Okay, Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah. I think Martin Luther King would be fantastic to have back at
Definitely.
This moment in time.
Definitely.
There is a side to me that would have liked to have seen more of JFK, because to see whether he actually was a good man or not, because depending on
which conspiracy theory you believe.
It seems like he had great principles, but he also seems like he was part of a very, very, you know, the old man was clearly a mafia boss, very, wasn't he, Joseph Kennedy, clearly very, very influential human being, certainly when you think about his...
So JFK?
You'd rather have JFK than Trump, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Trump would be a fucking nightmare, wouldn't he? Fucking hell, be a nightmare.
I'm not a team player.
I actually would like to meet him, but he just needs a slap, doesn't he, Trump? He just needs, like, settle down.
You get violent again, Joe.
Settle down. You don't know everything. Like, just settle down.
No, but he's a narcissist.
Yeah, he just needs a reality check. Like, hey, you're not that good looking. You're not that good. You're not that important. Yeah. You're not that clever.
Yeah,
you know, all the things that... He just needs a reality check. He just hasn't had checks and balances in his life. People saying to him, no, mate, you're actually a bit of a dickhead, because everybody needs someone around to say, stop being such
that
a cunt.
That is true.
Stop being... Listen,
right,
we've got children listening to this programme.
But three women.
So,
you can just edit that, okay?
We've got Martin Luther King, JFK, and we've got
Christopher Hitchens.
So there's a lot of talking going on. So we're going to need some very, very powerful...
doers.
Assertive women in the world.
Your grandma?
Yeah, my grandma... I think she'd sit in the background, my grandma, and take a lot in. It'd be great to see who she thought was a decent person or not. So for sure, I'd love my grandma to that. And also, she's one of the best judges of people I've ever met in my life. Usually she thinks you're a good person. She gets it relatively early, though. She's got a phenomenal way of...
Mm, some people just do.
Just natural way of doing it. So for sure, I'd love my grandma to be in there. And then trying to think of like women who've influenced me over the course of like my life journey. When I think of, you know, my life pretty much been spent in football. You know, pretty much spent in. And I watched Graham Norton last night, and I had a newfound respect for like Hillary Clinton. You know, I watched her and I thought, wow, like she's tough as old, you know, boots. She's got to have been to survive in the political landscape that she's survived in. But I thought she showed a real empathetic side to her that I thought, wow, if I'd have seen this and I was an American voter, I'd have definitely voted for you on this. But why didn't you show people this? Why did you go, like, why don't you just be yourself? Because herself would have been good enough. And you can. And I thought it was quite nice that she had Chelsea with her, and she spoke about the problems having Hillary and Bill Clinton, you know.
As your parents.
First lady, you know, and then running for president, to be the first woman president of the US, which is a country that's got lots of crazy shit going on. And then you've got the daughter of that saying the impact it had on her. And I just thought, wow, like, I'd love to sit and just converse with her and just say, how did you deal with this? How did you deal with that? Because she must have a phenomenal... skill set. She must have a phenomenal toolkit, and I think a toolkit that they could definitely do with in terms of their governments. I think I'd love to see her run for president again rather than Bloomberg, whoever's going for it now.
I
know,
it's hard.
But even though, well, hopefully she's inspired the next
generation.
You know, because we all stand on the shoulders of giants, you know, everybody stands on the great people that have been before and pioneers in many ways of what's been done before. And I think if that's the foundation that the next great female leader of America comes out of, then I think the world would be a better place if women were running countries, because they're better than men at many things. One of them would be leadership, I think.
Yeah.
I think because they lead every single day, the families, you know, in many families, I mean, women lead.
And who's your third woman?
Third woman, I'd like to go for someone from like kind of music and a musical background. I'd love to speak with Amy Winehouse. I think the torturedness of a genius, and I just think she just needed people around her just to say no, that's not okay to do that. And seeing somebody just die in front of you, basically, you know, massive Amy Winehouse fan. I thought the music she wrote was incredible. I thought her talent was incredible, and she was obviously very, very fragile as a person and used different coping strategies to try and make sense of the world that she was in. And I think just to give her a hug, just to be there for her and just say everything can be okay. She must have been so alone.
Such a sad story.
I think sitting amongst, you know, I like vulnerable people. I'm drawn to people who are vulnerable because I'm vulnerable myself, and vulnerable people help me, you know, understand that it's okay to be vulnerable. It's fine to not know. It's fine to not understand what you're doing. It's fine to be not good at things. It's okay. It's okay not to be perfect. It's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. And I think the world that we live in now tries to tell people that you can't get anything wrong, when actually everyone gets things wrong all the time, and the best people get things wrong more often, but just find a way of getting through it. And I think, you know, to speak with people like that, I would have loved it in terms of a football thing to speak to Johan Cruyff as well, because I just think he's just a fascinating character. And people who have strong opinions, I think, and they, if you sat at that table, you know, Oprah Winfrey's another one. I'm like, I'd love to speak to her. You could be here all day going through, couldn't you?
I know.
There's probably 50 other people I've forgotten about. I mean,
yeah, it's good to
I like Amy Winehouse.
But I think talented people and flawed people, that's everyone. I believe, my belief is, and me and my missus were debating this the other day, because she says I have like a kind of confidence stroke arrogance, and I was given it by my grandmother, because she told me you can be whatever you want to be. Just because you're from this background doesn't, you know, don't let your past define your future, and you can do good in the world and whatever it is that you're into. And my belief is, and me and my missus were talking about this the other day, I have a belief that everybody has innate genius within them. That's something that they can contribute to the world that they are fantastic at. And a lot of people don't ever get the chance to showcase that because of the cards that they're dealt as young people, or the schools that they go to, or the job opportunities, or the life choices they make, or the circle of friends they keep. And I think you've got to try and find that. Try and find the greatness within everyone, you know, whether it's a homeless person or a member of the House of Lords, that they will have good and bad in them. And you've got to try and get it out of them and find common ground and work towards something with them.
What a fun day out at Fleetwood, Dad.
We did have a nice time, didn't we? And then
we did, and it was sunny, and we got to go into the dressing room, and we met a guy who is Joey's security guard to stop Joey from getting into trouble. His full-time security guard.
He's not really.
He said he was.
He was a joke. He's got a job there, but I think they all see their job slightly to kind of keep an eye on him.
Yeah, fair enough. He needs a lot of carving down.
Up, he?
Yeah, he does. But
Fleetwood, I quite liked it up there. The lovely hotel, lovely views.
Yeah, we've already met. We've already.
Oh, we said that
hotel
last week. Didn't we?
But I guess, you know, interesting. I actually am happy that we had Joey Barton onto the podcast. I did not agree with him on a lot of stuff, but I actually found it really interesting talking to someone like him who is so widely kind of, people imagine what he's like. I think a lot.
Mm.
And people imagine what he thinks, and it was interesting just to sit down with him. I'm not sure. There are a lot of people I know who would still always call him a scumbag.
Yeah, well, hey ho.
But it was very interesting.
I just know he's a very good player and did a great job at Burnley. Now the other thing is, I did after the election. I did about 24 hours when I did loads of media, then I thought, sod it, that's it, enough, just don't do any more. But I promised to do Stephen Sacker, BBC World Hard Talk programme, which is, you know, quite a good interview programme. And do you know what he said to me?
What?
He said, you get some great guests on your podcast. I said, yeah. He said, I'd love to get Joey Barton on Hard Talk. So I'm going to mention that to Joey.
Yeah, I mean, he loves to talk.
He loves to talk. He said last week, didn't he, do Question Time again.
Yes.
And I think he'd be good on Hard Talk.
Yeah.
So there you are, Joey, if you're
but
listening.
Who knows, maybe he'll be managing Everton before not long.
Everton Burnley Boxing Day, that's a big game. They're all big games now, Grace.
Are you going up there?
I think you'll find it's one not to miss.
Well,
and then we're off to Scotland.
Good luck to you. Good luck to Burnley. Up the Clarets. Merry Christmas to all of you for listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
For your support. And have a great Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.